Master Azalea, Chapter 1, A Righteous Soul. A long time ago, in the city of Gargeshit held the happiness of all creatures alike, and gave hope to any stranger passing through. There was a boy named Master Azalea, a very scary yet handsome enough to catch the attention of fellow species alike kind of boy. The young girls at the Gargeshit School for Youth and Magical Adolescents would always rate him highest on the list of most handsome boyish species. Aster has eyes that glow in the dark, green, almost as if two marbles had been molded out of a rare emerald coral. The porcelain yet olive tone of his skin gives canvas to the white and dark brown freckles that in a way match the constellations above. Aster, for some reason, projects a pheromone that smells of salted caramel and a weirdly enough satisfying aroma of butter pecan. The voice that resonates from his thin lips receives the strangest looks, as if it might belong to an elderly man, shaky and soft, the personality of an old lion with a youthful heart, or a recluse who refuses to blow out the candle of being a socialite. Best describes young Aster. A timid boy, to say the least, with a caring heart for his best friends and mother. Aster himself has rarely ever been heard from afar, always maintaining a soft-spoken demeanor. The part that makes him scary is his lanky physique and oddly long arms that allow his fingertips to touch the top of his knee. Aster Azalea is a descendant from a long line of half-breeds, one half consisting of measly human blood, of course, and the other half boasting the genetics of an ancient blood-sucking creature that the city dwellers call Greengein Kropman, which translates to green eye monster in an old German dialect. The Greengein Kropman are, of course, green-eyed, yet the darker and more prevalent the green eyes grow, the stronger the Kropman themselves are. The strength of the Greengein Kropman consists of the ability to bind spells to other spells and thrive off the blood of animals, and not just humans. The nature of binding spells is the most dangerous among all the dark magic and sorcery. The ability to do so could destroy whole armies in battle. A full-blooded Kropman can easily be spotted by a few characteristics. The skin of a full-blooded Kropman has a luster and glow to it. The glow is as they are radiating soft shades of light, as if a lantern is flickering before your eyes. The eyelids of a full-blooded Kropman have two layers and close horizontally and vertically. The blink of a green-eyed Kropman will have your heart fluttering to see another. The last and most peculiar telltale trait of a full-blooded Kropman is the hair on their head and body that changes color to the mood of the atmosphere that encompasses them throughout the day. The green-eyed Kropman women are the most interesting when it comes to a Kropman. The Kropman women are interestingly pretty, to say the least, with their height ranging from 5 feet 10 inches to the towering height of 7 feet tall. The male Kropman stand no more than 5 feet 10 inches in height and are known for being in tip-top physical shape until death or old age finds them. The Kropman women have no glow to their skin and has almost no color, leaving them almost albino in nature. Luckily, the glowing green eyes give the pale white skin of a Kropman woman a nice pop art look at first glance. The Kropman women are not only tall in height, but have long, lanky arms and are somewhat skinnier than the average full-blooded man. The names of all green-eyed Kropman women start with the letter O and are somewhat hard to pronounce. Green-eyed Kropman, whether male or female, tends to die from old age, of course. The average age of death for a green-eyed Kropman, if one's diet readily consists of animal or human blood, ranges from 900 to 1,700 years. That being said, the Kropman themselves eventually become lonesome and clinically insane. The oldest green-eyed Kropman recorded in the Gargeshit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record-Breaking lived to be the sad age of 4,821 and a quarter years old. The green-eyed Kropman lived to be so old that the Gargeshit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record-Breaking has to rewrite Graspedia Baptisia's age every year, considering his heart keeps starting back up and he wakes from his tomb regularly to play the same song on an old wild pin tooth organ. The Gargeshit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record Breaking confirms he's still alive when in the dead of night people wake from the nightmarish sounds coming from his tomb. The front of this Greengein Kropman's tomb reads as follows. With my ear against the wall, I hear the footsteps of death sleeping down the hall, with the name Craspedia Baptisia engraved below. Aster Azalea was named by his mother, who was full-blooded human. Tulip Azalea, the name spoken by all in Gargeshit, well, at least once a week, that is young enough to be considered Aster's older sister. Tulip gave birth to young Aster when she was just shy of 13 years old. Tulip was hidden by a cloaking spell for 9 months that her father procured from a close friend, Dr. Canterbury. The spell made the city folks see Tulip as slowly becoming heavy-set and not pregnant. Of course, she lost the weight again once Aster was born, and the spell was stricken. Aster's father was sent to the all-boys school of dark and abandoned magic, where he remained until his father seemed he was fit and gentleman enough to return to Gargeshit. The boys' school of dark and abandoned magic is one of the oldest buildings in Gargeshit. The building itself resides on the outskirts of the city atop a steep hill and can be seen with its flickering oil torches shining in the night sky all the way from Gargeshit City Park. The school was previously a mansion that was built for the first dark magic constable. The building is a chateau-style home in the front extending far in the rear with a large stone veranda and black cast iron spindle railing. The double half-loop stone stairway leads to 16-foot-high double oak doors that were made from an ancient elite Gorgon tree cut by the dark magic constable himself to make way for the Gargeshit City Hall. 26 rooms and 14 bathrooms give space for enough distraught adolescent boys alone. The city of Gargeshit itself is over 226 years old and has a combined population of human and species monsters totaling 9,100 and 26. Gargeshit is a mere 15 miles long and 15 miles wide to be exact, but an extra magic mile extends city length on all sides. The sign when entering the city of Gargeshit is carved from a bright magic Gale Forest twisted cypress. The city's motto on the sign reads, "Endangered like a wild beast, the dreams of women and man alike. Passion shut off by clouded judgment. Can you hear the shrieks of nature's cry?" Of course, below that reads, "Welcome to the city of Gargeshit." The extra magical mile supposedly can only be entered into and seen if you are completely blackout drunk on the fermented teat milk of a rabid birthing bright magic ogre. The extra mile is somewhat of another vertical dimension that allows your body to pass through at an extreme rate of speed. Yet the mind and eyes adjust and see a normal world extended an extra mile. The bright magic extra mile is the only vertical dimension world to buy certain items that in the city of Gargeshit itself are illegal. The last time Tulip was drunk on rabid birthing bright magic ogre teat milk and went into the bright magic extra mile, she was in search for the elusive Vantablack squirm powder that when mixed with honey turns into a completely waterproof hairspray. The Vantablack squirm powder is illegal in Gargeshit mainly because a group of students decided to mix it into a vat of jelly in the School for Youth and Magical Adolescence cafeteria, which when mixed with jelly can fill an entire room from floor to ceiling with purple sugar. The combination itself can produce purple sugar for days on end. Aster's mother Tulip is the city florist and owns Lupin Lilies, which is the flower landmark that stands out in the city square with giant colorful glass-blown flowers sprouting out the top of the old red brick building. The glow from the moonlight at night reflects off the large glass flowers atop, giving an eerie shadow on the ground below. The glimmer from the blown glass flowers also gives a blissful saturation for all eyes to ponder upon. A landmark indeed, for all the city dwellers to bask in their beauty. A sound can almost be heard resonating from the hollow inner curves of the glass flowers, as if music was being played without an orchestra. Lupin Lilies has been an azalea family faucet, pouring happiness and warmth into all species alike. An old wooden sign above the store entrance swings in the wind and reads as follows: "Light shows you shadows. Shadows remind us we exist. Thank you, light." Which is the Manuka honey spell. The customer can repeat the phrase 3 times upon entrance, and a magical bee balm buzz fairy will appear to give you a complimentary stick of sweet honey. Lavender and jasmine can be smelt almost 2 blocks away, so no need for a weary stranger of the store to ask for directions. The honey sticks, of course, coming from the Busby Honey and Procurement store next door. A deal between Tulip's father, Alstromuria, and the owners of Busby Honey and Procurement's, Mr. and Mrs. Horribell, was made years before Tulip was even born. The deal was a bee bomb buzz fairy would deliver a sweet honey stick upon saying the Manuka honey spell three times at the Lupin Lily's entrance. A honeysuckle croon mech would then produce a quart of bright magic honeysuckle honey, appearing in the croon mech honey dispenser that till this day sits on the counter next to the register at the Buzzbee Honey and Procurement Store. Mr. and Miss Corbell have owned the Buzzbee Honey and Procurement Store since the Great War of Kelbladeg and have helped Tulip raise young Astor ever since. The Corbells were not able to have kids on their own. Miss Corbell has spent years teaching young Astor the art of dark apiculture sorcery, and Mr. Corbell has taught him as many bright age procurement spells as he can. The shop itself has ceilings that are 60 feet high and a giant beehive with over 20 billion bees dangling overhead. The beehive consists of 5 different species of bees: the western honeybee, the Apis florea, Apis dorsata, Apis carina, and the Apis Andronin foramus. The honey from all 5 bee species drips down into a large cone connected to a funnel and slowly oozes down to a massive vat where it is then processed. The honey is then scooped out of the massive vat by the bee bomb buzz fairies, where the magical buzzing fairy wing dust shakes into every quart filled jar. The mixture of all 5 species of honeybee honey and the added magical buzzing fairy wing dust makes for a delightful treat for all ages and also cures the most common cold. Mr. and Mrs. Corbell are from a long line of large calla lily fairies. The large calla lily fairies stand around 4 feet 8 inches and have a wingspan of exactly 4 feet 8 inches, which surprisingly matches their height. The wings themselves are semi-transparent, with the outlining cartilage and blood vessels changing colors. The colors themselves changing from bright neon to the warmest of saturation. The large calla lily fairy undoubtedly has a peculiar taste for sweets. The chance a large calla lily has to leave the ground is minimal. The diet of sweets alone has led most large calla lily fairies into having large bellies that tend to weigh them down. Mr. Corbell gave a younger Miss Tulip a good laugh when he was stung by a dark magic wasp on the buttocks. Mr. Corbell screamed as his wings began to flutter, sending him face first toward the ground. Then, and only then, has Tulip ever seen a large calla lily fairy fly. Though his plump belly was only a few inches off the ground, it was still recorded in the Gargashit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record Breaking as the highest and longest vertical flight a large calla lily fairy has ever taken. Tulip to this day has never been able to get the image of Mr. Corbell's belly bouncing across the floor and the noise, that of a squeegee on a pane of glass. Lupin Lilies is the only place to buy dark magic influences during any season. The only floral shop in Gargashit that offers a satisfaction guaranteed or full refund policy to any human or species of monster. The building itself displays a Gargashit Beautification Award on the front every year. Lupin Lilies has worn the award front its large cypress double doors ever since Tulip's grandfather handed over the keys to her father, and he then handed the keys over to her. The award for Best Magical Floral Shop has been awarded multiple times as well. The name Astor itself passed down from his grandfather on his father's side. His mother, Tulip, wasn't too keen on him being named after such a mean man, but couldn't deny the uncanny resemblance to Mr. Foxglove. Astor Foxglove just so happens to own the Foxglove Tincture Shop, the Foxglove being the only place in town for any species of monster or half-breed's apothecary needs. The Foxglove Tincture Shop is directly across the Gargashit City Park from Lupin Lilies. The Foxglove building is 4 stories high and is made of dark magic pine and bright white plaster that crumbles atop, dropping small pieces when the wind blows. An old tale says there's a secret magical spell that can be cast in the doorway to procure entrance to higher floors that cannot be seen. The rumors of these dark magic floors say they're for the customers who are the highest levels of magic themselves. Once one speaks of these floors, they will forever be banned. No one has ever witnessed entrance to these floors. Supposedly, the dark entrance spell has a memory deletion spell attached to it for fellow bystanders passing by. Aster did not share the surname of his grandfather, Aster Foxglove, considering his father left when he was just a newborn and his mother's father insisted on him being an Azalea. Aster's biological father, Alpenrose Foxglove, left Gargadget only weeks after returning from the reform school of dark and banded magic. Alpenrose has never been seen or heard from since he left. Not even his father, Mr. Foxglove, knows of Alpenrose's whereabouts. The old gossip, somewhat a small legend now, is that he befriended a force of Zwerg demons, and they allowed him entrance into one of the Zwerg's magical underground cities. The story is that he had to be passed through an ancient dark Zwerg demon ritual, where he was then branded on a shoulder blade with the crest of the Zwerg demon, supposedly under the branding in a secret symbol that can only be seen by Zwerg demons. The symbol translates to lesser than. Tulip has never divulged anything about Alpenrose to young Aster, although Mr. Foxglove did send him an old sweater with his father's initials stitched to it on his 13th birthday. The note his grandfather sent with the sweater wrote that it was his first sweater he received when arriving at the all-boys school of dark and abandoned magic. Aster wears his father's old school sweater almost every day, and it has always annoyed his mother Tulip. The sweater is soft twill and wool blend that boasts somewhat of a raised square pattern, and a stitching of a red alpenrose can be seen on the cusp of the sleeve. The dark navy blue color of the fabric is faded and has speckled bleach stains on the bottom and slightly around the collar. Aster Foxglove is one of the wealthiest and last remaining full-blood green-eyed croatmen in the city. Yet Mr. Foxglove refuses to acknowledge his grandson Aster, being a half-breed and all. Not saying Mr. Foxglove himself secretly doesn't keep tabs on young Aster and secretly pay for his schooling and trolls. The love Mr. Foxglove shares for young Aster just goes unspoken and is hidden from all to see. Tulip Azalea's father, Astromeria, died in the Great War of Cowbladeg during a routine scouting mission through the Gil Forest of Cowbladeg Valley. Tulip had just given birth to baby Aster a few weeks before Astromeria was shipped off during the Great War of Cowbladeg. Astromeria was in the Gargeshit Guard Reserve and served as a head projectionist with a commanding role among his squad. A head projectionist is a high-ranking position only a few full-blood human spellcasters can possess. It's the ability to cast a projection of a spell deflecting camouflage among any soldier. The camouflage itself can be in the shape or form of anything the head projectionist desires. Almost a chameleon of projections. Alstromeria had mastered this skill and was recognized as one of the greatest in the Gargeshit Guard Reserve. The squad Alstromeria was in charge of was a scouting squad of spellcasters. The scouts consisted of two demon raisers, two divine spellcasters, two heavy fire breathers, and of course, the head projectionist. One of the divine spellcasters was none other than Alstromeria's best friend, Dr. Canterbury. The demon raisers were just new recruits at that time and hadn't fully mastered the art of raising and controlling the dead. The squad nicknamed them the necromancers. The heavy fire breathers were the ones who could harness the power of throwing massive balls of flames and could also teleport a projection of themselves while they were under a head projectionist spell of sedation. The divine spellcasters were seasoned veterans when it came to the war and art of magic. Dr. Canterbury was also the medic of the scouting squad and had just learned the spell of eternal healing, one of the hardest among all spells. The scouting squad had just arrived at the entrance of the Gil Forest Pass when the Zwerg demon army had retreated back into the Gil Forest, but the Gargeshit Guard Reserve suspected it was a Zwerg demon trap. To lure them into the forest, Alstromeria's scouting squad was assigned a classified mission to follow a group of the retreating Zwerg demons into the forest. The mission, of course, allowed Alstromeria to use his projectionist spell to cast a camouflage, letting the whole squad be seen as Zwerg demons. The Gargeshit Guard Reserve, wearing the battle uniform consisting of red clay-colored magic rayon wool blend pants. The pants themselves are manufactured at the textile mill that is owned by Dr. Canterbury and is regarded as one of the most renowned clothing manufacturers in all the realms. The name Canterbury can be read on all the patches that are stitched and to the bottom of most tops, and the inner backside of all pants. A Canterbury clothing patch has a short, bright, magic phrase on all that reads, clapping once, clapping twice, clapping three times, it'll happen, nice. The bright magic spell itself, when recited by the owner of the clothing, sends the article of clothing into the air, folding itself, and then softly floats down to the surface at hand. The mustard yellow cashmere tops are made from the slaughter of Zwerg demon goats. The tops are also manufactured at the Canterbury Textile Mill, where the cashmere fabric is dipped into a unique solution of dye mixed with Vantablack squirm powder. The solution allows the fabric to be none other than completely waterproof. The boots were outfitted by Miss Daisies, one of the oldest dark magic bootmakers in Gargeshit. The name Miss Daisies might sound soft, but Miss Daisy herself is one of the meanest cloaking witches in all the land. The boots themselves come to life when a Gargeshit soldier is wounded and carries them to safety. Whether the soldier is conscious or unconscious, the boots are thin yet durable and ply, with the outside made from the leather of a victory six-legged Hereford grass-fed bull, and the inner lined with ultra-soft water-repellent fabric woven from the wings of deceased honeysuckle crewmix. The victory six-legged Hereford bull is famously known among all Bose tourists of species alike. The bulls themselves normally stand around 6 feet tall on all four legs. But when the victory six-legged Hereford bull is frightened, it springs up onto its fifth and sixth legs in the rear. The victory six-legged Hereford bull on its fifth and sixth legs stands at an abrupt 9 feet 2 inches tall. A very frightful night of cow tipping for all youthful species of boys and girls. The victory six-legged Hereford bull is among the hardest to tip. The inner lining of the boots, of course, being derived from honeysuckle crewmix, makes for an oddly weird sweet aroma that resonates from the feet. The honeysuckle crewmix are a species of tiny fairies that are not pleasant or amusing to look at. The fairies are around 7 inches long and have skinny arms that stretch to their feet, allowing them to cling to any species and bite when upset. The solid black bug eyes pop out when frightened, yet stay fastened to their head and slowly reel in when calmed down. This is the only time the honeysuckle crewneck fairies are fun to watch. The species of fairies themselves are overpopulated and very hard to control. The honeysuckle crewneck fairies multiply in threes when wet. The city of Gargeshit has a honeysuckle crewneck population control department for this very reason, and is one of the most overpaid but disturbing jobs in the city. The eyelets of the boots are also made from part of a honeysuckle crewneck. The teeth of the honeysuckle crewneck fairy are very sharp, but melt down nicely considering they are made of a dense copper. The fairy teeth, when melted down, are molded into circle eyelets and are extremely strong, for the laces can be tied tight, and the copper itself is as shiny as a glowing star. The copper eyelets glow when the soldier is wounded. The copper from the honeysuckle crewneck teeth is mixed with the bright magic wing dust of the fairy when the eyelet is molded. The honeysuckle crewneck bright magic wing dust itself allows the copper eyelets to glow bright, as the easily and upsetting temperament of the crewneck still resonates after death within the eyelets, allowing a wounded or upset soldier to activate the glow. The soldiers themselves wear a battle ring on their left pointer finger that is made specifically for that fighter. The ring is made by the local non-magic blacksmith and is then buried beneath their first kill. The ring is then cursed by a bribed dark abandoned magic witch, while at the same moment an ancient necromancer brings the soldier's first kill back to life. The soldier then has to cut the head off their first kill immediately so the witch can accept the first kill's body as her bribe for the curse. The ring itself gives each soldier their strength. Some have more strength depending on what the first kill was. The strength of a bright magic ecclesial battle ring slowly diminishes after every kill made by the soldier wearing it. A bright ecclesial battle ring retires when the soldier has served his time and the remainder of the ring's power is transferred to the soldier's heart. The power left over from a retired bright magic ecclesial battle ring, once transferred to the soldier's heart, makes him look at least 5 years younger and gives their skin a Gargeshit glow, allowing all others to know they were once the protectors of that city. The ring itself can only be used by the soldier it was made for, and the power can only be transferred to the soldier's heart. If the soldier dies in battle while wearing it, the ring automatically binds to their finger. Alstromeria has a solid gold bright magic echolecial battle ring that encompasses his whole finger and the strength of an elite Gorgon warrior. The elite Gorgon warriors stand almost 9 feet tall and can lift the largest of boulders. The Gorgon warrior's power was transferred to the ring, turning everything Alstromeria kills into stone. Alstromeria's bright magic echolecial battle ring has an engravement on the inside that reads, "I'll play for you until my fingers bleed. Even after that, I'll continue to sing, because my love for you is like a symphony." The passage engraved on the ring itself is something his wife at the time would always say. The most comical ring in Alstromeria's scouting squad is that of Dr. Canterbury, whose first kill was a powerful siren. Mr. Canterbury's ring, made from silver and coated in colorful carnation coral, allows him to breathe underwater, but also makes him weak when it's dry. The laughter among all in the squad arises when Dr. Canterbury always has a wet finger. The rings only work with the hands that made the first kill. The time had come for Alstromeria and his squad to enter the Gill Forest, where the Zwerg Demon Army had retreated. The whole squad was timid, yet ready for a fight. Alstromeria had the squad set in a V formation, 3 soldiers on the left and 2 on the right. Alstromeria himself centered in the back of the formation, giving him enough room to cast his projection spell among his squad. Alstromeria had a passage that he would always say aloud to his squad before any mission. The squad was all ears in anticipation for the passage. Alstromeria began to speak. "In a way, I am numb. Null to the point of confusion. Eccentric to another old soul, confused by a rotation on a tilted axis. Pivotal until a striking pin unfolds a flame. A rise in temperature to shiver less. Bold statements from an equal alike. Remorse is but mute. Remorse is but mute." The squad began to slowly move forward, remaining in a V formation. Alstromeria would then abruptly shout out, "Wedge," changing the squad's formation altogether. The squad then dropped all chests to ground while Alstromeria took a knee to check direction of the footprints left by the Zwerg demons. He softly spoke, telling the squad to pick up and shift left. The squad at that time began to hear the screeches of Firestone raining down from above. The 2 divine spellcasters, without hesitation, cast a spell of elevated gravity, leaving all Firestone floating above the squad's heads. Alstromeria began to scream, as the demon raisers were new recruits and dumbfounded by the action taking place. Alstromeria's scream raised the dead, remorseless but mute. The 2 demon raisers quickly took knee and began to swirl a clenched fist in the air with their eyes turning completely white. More than 10 ancient necromancer ogres arose from the ground, while 3 extinct gill goblins took flight. The 2 heavy fire breathers kept their chest against the ground, lying flat on their stomach. Alstromeria began screaming, "Ground fire, ground fire." The 2 heavy fire breathers took knee and began to raise fire from the ground, almost as their arms and hands were directing a symphony. The symphony then began to play simultaneously and in perfect harmony. Alstromeria, with a golden finger in the air, began to compose. The 2 divine spellcasters had grins on their faces from a wink Alstromeria just gave them. The 2 divine spellcasters sent the Firestone floating above the squad's heads back towards the Zwerg demon army. Alstromeria yelled, "I am but numb," signaling the 2 heavy fire breathers to turn fire into ice. The demon raisers then slammed both of their hands on the ground, together raising almost 100 tormented lost Gargeshit souls from the icy grounds before them. Alstromeria then screamed, "Forward," as the squad had the upper hand. The squad jumped to their feet and began to sprint, still in a wedge formation, just spread out and somewhat cantered. The squad slid to their knees atop the ice-covered ground as Alstromeria began to project Zwerg demon camouflage into the squad to confuse the Zwerg demon army that was in the near distance. The Zwerg Demon Army was casting their own Zwerg Demon Zwerg Dark Fire spells in an attempt to melt the icy ground. At that very moment, the 10 necromancer ogres slid through the Zwerg firewall. The ogres' rotted flesh catching fire and spreading flames onto the Zwerg demon catapults. The 3 gill goblins also caught fire and dropped from the skies above, sending the goblins crashing to the ground, exploding on impact. The 100 tortured Gargeshit souls made their way through the Zwerg demon fire, instantly exploding from the buildup of rotted death gas inside them. Alstramiri and Dr. Canterbury locked eyes, and both nodded their heads, knowing that the Zwergs were burning alive. Dr. Canterbury then turned his attention to the Zwerg firewall, and it was at that time Alstramiria fell face first into a puddle of melting, icy mud. A Zwerg demon then jumped up from a secret tunnel behind the squad and cast the ancient Zwerg demon spell of Fallen Defeat, briefly crippling Alstramiria long enough to drag him back into the tunnel from which he came. One of the heavy fire breathers, at the moment Alstramiria was dragged into the tunnel unconscious, began to scream, "Take cover," as Firestone began to thunder down on the squad. The tardiness of the fire breather's warning to the squad of incoming Firestone laid ruin to the ground on which they held. The sound of six thuds could be heard almost as a domino effect of death had engulfed the squad. Dr. Canterbury had only lost consciousness as the rest of the squad's lifeless bodies were engulfed in flames. Minutes had passed while Dr. Canterbury started to gain consciousness again. The Zwerg demon front was still busy fighting off the swarm of flaming, tortured Gargeshit souls as Dr. Canterbury rose to his feet and began to retreat toward the moonlit tree line in the distance from where the squad had come from. The recently unconscious Dr. Canterbury was able to make his way to the moonlit tree line, where he fell unconscious once more. But luckily for Dr. Canterbury, a second scouting squad was just about to pick up and move to the left of where he lay. The story goes that Dr. Canterbury only fell unconscious because Alstramiria had cast an internal healing spell on him while being dragged into the secret Zwerg demon tunnel. Dr. Canterbury would have become engulfed in flames from the falling Firestone, if not. The legend of Alstramiria and the squad performing a near-perfect synchronized symphony of dark magic against his Zwerg demon front during the Great War of Gelbladeg is still talked about. The Gargeshit Guard Reserve still uses the reenactment of the remorseless but mute scouting mission as training for the new recruits. The Gil Forest, till this day, is a place no man or species of monster dares to enter. The Great War of Gelbladeg has made the Gargeshit Guard Reserve one of the greatest and most feared dark magic forces in all magical realms. A massive marble fountain takes precedence directly in the middle of the Gargeshit Park, the fountain itself being a monument for the city folk to gaze into its beauty. The front of the marble fountain reads, "A rise in temperature to shiver less." The water that flows out the top comes directly from a magical underground hot spring. The water from the fountain itself has a sweet taste, and if enough is drunk, a slight euphoria will encompass the soul. The city of Gargeshit has contemplated an age restriction for those who dare to drink the water, yet no law has ever been stated. Tulip, being a master florist, has ventured into the outskirts of the Gil Forest in search for certain flowers that only grow where Zwerg demons have died. The Gil Forest itself is somewhat of a long hike to get to. The sign at the outskirts of Gargeshit reads, 36 kilometers to Gil Forest. The entrance to the Gil Forest does not exist because the Gargeshit City Elders have placed a secret spell that hides any forest entrance that leads any intrigued soul into a whirlwind of short-term amnesia. Tulip was taught everything her father knew when she was a child. Alstramiria's teachings were one of Tulip's favorite pastimes as a child. The secret spells her father knew were ingrained in her memory before he was killed in the Great War of Gelbladeg. Aster knows she only goes in hopes of finding truth of her father's death. Tulip will not accept the fact that he was killed by his Zwerg demon and his body dragged into his Zwerg underworld. In hopes that her father was taken as prisoner and eventually escapes, Tulip always makes the journey to the outskirts once a year. Tulip always leaves a bouquet of cardinal flowers wrapped in twine. They were her father's favorite. The city of Gargeshit elders themselves have contemplated sending scouting teams in to collect data for the city of Gargeshit Magic Research and Abandoned Resource Society. The Zwerg demons lay dormant in their cities beneath the Gil Forest since the end of the Great War of Gelbladeg. The city of Gargeshit elders fear an uprising in the near future. The Gargeshit Guard Reserve, to this day, remains on high alert. The present is what young Astor tries to focus on in his future is trying to join an elite force of spellbinding creatures like him called the Dram Chrysanthemums. Drams for short. The Gargeshit Guard Reserve parted ways with any involvement in the Banded Elite Dark Magic Forces Society, leaving the Banded Elite Dark Magic Forces Society to their own private sectors. The Drams are the most respected and distinguished spellcasters and demon fighters known to all private sectors of the Banded Elite Dark Magic Forces Society, and are picky in their selection of recruits. Astor, since he was a young child, has always been able to recite the Dram Chrysanthemum's motto. The Dram's motto reads as follows: "Through borrowed time, I have grown to live, never truly knowing what my heart can give. When I close my eyes to fall asleep, it's up to fate to let me wake. Eyes once shut are now to open, for my dreams will always go unspoken. Nightmares to remember most, no father, no son, no holy ghost." The Dram Chrysanthemums are a legend among all the private sector dark magic forces in all the realms. The Drams played a small role in the Great War of Kel'Blodeg, sending in a Dram Chrysanthemum darkness elder spell casting force in hopes to collect and secure as many Zwerg Demon Heartstones as they could. The Zwerg Demon Heartstone is no more than a heart cut from the chest of a great northern Zwerg demon necromancer battle prince. The heart from a great northern Zwerg demon necromancer battle prince glows ruby red from the chest and emerald green from the center. The heart itself immediately turns to a powerful precious stone the moment the head of the northern Zwerg demon necromancer battle prince is cut off. The stone itself is used to harness the power atop the cane of only the most powerful enlightened dark magic elder. The cane, once a heartstone is mended to it, has the power to bring deafening thunder from the dark forces above. Positioned toward an enemy just right can make one's heart stop. Astor opted out of attending the University of Gargeshit in hopes that being the descendant of a foxglove and grandson of Astromeria Azalea, legacy of the Drams, would give him an upper hand. Tulip taught Astor everything she could in the art of dark florum, and as much as she could from the teachings her father taught her of projection spell casting. The art of dark florum is a delicate form of herbal and flower sorcery that has been lost over the years. Tulip herself is the only person in Gargeshit who still practices dark florum, and teaches a class as an adjunct professor once a week at the University of Gargeshit. Attendance is dwindling. Astor is on the cusp of turning 18 and has surprisingly acquired more power than some of the Gargeshit elders themselves. The University of Gargeshit has offered young Astor a full scholarship that would cover room and board as well, but Astor has more knowledge than most graduates themselves. Tulip won't pressure Astor into going to university, mainly because both his grandfathers were just as smart and stubborn and opted out. The Drams themselves host a prestige gala alongside two other lesser sought after spellcasting groups, the Dakino and the Demetzlers. Astor's grandfather, Mr. Foxglove, is a legacy of the Dakino and a generous donor as well. The gala is the event of the year for all species of humans and monsters who are hoping for an early bid into the training academy. The early bid itself will not only secure one's way into the academy, but will give an earlier admittance before the rest of the selection of new recruits arrive. Astor has been pining away in the family floral shop, Lupin Lilies, working hard and scraping together as much money as he can to save in hopes that he can afford room and board at the training academy. Tulip can't but secretly smile at young Astor when he's not looking, knowing his grandfather, Mr. Foxglove, has already paid for his admittance in his room at the academy. Tulip still pressures Astor to attend the University of Gargeshit, but she understands that all the men in the family have either attended the Dark Academy or at least tried. Astor has struggled maintaining his composure when it comes to learning about the dark arts and spells ahead of the Dark Training Academy. The useless knowledge from the notes and drawings his grandfather Alstromeria had left behind has secretly given him an unknowingly edge. His mother, Tulip, always reminding young Astor to call upon his friends, knowing that he'll need them in the future. Tulip herself, being only human, was surprisingly born with the ability to dreamscape. Dreamscaping is somewhat frowned upon in the everyday world of magic, but Tulip keeps this ability hidden. The ability to see the future in short, vivid dreams when she sleeps, hence the name Dreamscape. The future that Tulip sees in her dreams is not from a person
person's perspective, but somewhat of an angled bird's eye view. Tulip has seen and still sees bits and pieces of Aster's future and knows he needs his three best friends to remain close. The one thing Aster always remembers is his mother reciting a passage she always hears whispered to her from one of her dreams. Passage reads, "Insides are scorched and fried from the loss of a bride who stood next to a man who was filled with pride. For all those who see, for all those who feel, for all who wonder if they could kill." Tulip has always told Aster he would lose a dearly loved one before finding the truth of his existence. Aster always ignores his mother when she speaks of her dreamscapes, knowing she has psychotic breaks from time to time. Tulip, no matter how crazy her dreamscapes can make her, always regains her strength and composure on life. Aster's three best friends have remained close-knit ever since they were all in grade school. Three of them, including Aster, have been raised by pretty much the same people, considering most of the families all own some sort of store that lines the sidewalk circling the Gargesh at City Park. The descendants of the four families are all intertwined for marriage, serving alongside each other in war, and family feuds that have even resulted in murder. The fact that Cleon Petunia has worked at the Foxglove Tincture Shop since he was just a kid, and also taught by Mr. Foxglove himself, has not halted Aster and Cleon's friendship. Aster and Cleon themselves have had their arguments along the years, mainly being the fact that Mr. Foxglove won't even acknowledge his grandson Aster, and has never once welcomed him into the Foxglove Tincture Shop. Although, when Aster was a young kid, he snuck in and stole an empty glass tincture bottle with his father Alpenrose's name on it. Aster and Cleon were both invited to the Banded Elite Dark Magic Forces Society Gala, and both have their sights set on different dark spellcasting forces. Cleon Petunia, regardless of his feminine last name, is a well-manicured and distinguished brute. He has been highly trained in the art of Trank by Mr. Foxglove. Trank itself is a form of magic potion making. Cleon has his heart and mind set on becoming a Dakino, and Mr. Foxglove has already submitted a letter of recommendation for him. Cleon Petunia is no more and no less than 6 feet 9 inches tall. Young Cleon is from a long ancient line of bright magic third wide-eyed cyclops. The bright magic third wide-eyed cyclops has towering height, broad shoulders, and chest that allows a rather large head to fasten to. The bright magic third-eyed cyclops surprisingly has 3 eyes instead of one. The third eye encompassing most of his forehead and allows the bright magic third-eyed cyclops to see into the bright and dark magic worlds at any given time. The strength of a bright magic third-eyed cyclops is unparalleled and matches the strength of an elite Gorgon warrior. The bright magic third-eyed cyclops is an endangered species of people and is sought after by all three abandoned elite dark magic forces societies. Cleon's mother is a bright magic third-eyed cyclops, and his father a bright magic Malek demon, which the combination of the two has had to be recorded in the Gargeshit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record Breaking as one of the first babies to be born of that combination of species of people. The Gargeshit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record Breaking reads as follows. "Just leaning on a wall, have little footing so I might fall. Will you be there as a friend? I want that feeling of surprise and not pretend. Really, either will do as long as you're here and I'm with you." Then reads below the passage, "On this day, Cleon Petunia is born the first of his kind, a well-mannered boy with somewhat of a shine. Irish Canterbury is the odd friend, the friend who is somewhat more familiar with Aster's personality than his own self. Irish is the grandson of Dr. Canterbury, who, of course, has trained Iris in the art of and somewhat business of bright magic Stoff and Farf. Yes, a comical name, but the bright magic of Stoff and Farf is one of the most time-consuming. The bright magic of Stoff and Farf consists of bright spell binding and bright spell casting, which is any type of bright magic that involves fabric or dye. Iris Canterbury, as well as his grandfather, are both bright magic blissful fusion fairies, and are both very dainty yet handsomely good-looking. The bright magic blissful fusion fairy is a very peculiar species, considering they are always dressed for the show, usually wearing the latest in bright magic fashion. The bright magic blissful fusion fairy boasts a height of nearly 5 feet 10 inches, surprisingly the same height as the male Gringine Croatman, yet usually weighs around 120 pounds. A very dainty, yet tall enough to catch the eye of any single species alive type of fairy. The wingspan of a bright magic blissful fusion fairy spreads from shoulder blade to wing tip at the length of 5 feet 2 inches each wing. The wings themselves are solid black, yet have such a high gloss shine to them that when they flutter, the light sends an almost blinding glare into any onlooker's eyes. The bright, magic, blissful fusion fairy, unlike the large calla lily fairy, can delightfully take flight and maintain somewhat of a high altitude for almost 3 whole hours. The Gargashit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record-Breaking has successfully recorded Dr. Canterbury as the record-breaking bright, magic, blissful fusion fairy of Gargashit, with a total flight time of 5 hours, 23 minutes, and 3 quarters of a second. Dr. Canterbury's time is 4 seconds longer than the previous bright, magic, blissful fusion fairy, Mr. Hosta. Mr. Hosta was not a very happy bright, magic, blissful fusion fairy when he received a letter from the Gargashit Book of Bright Magical Truths and Record-Breaking that his record had ultimately been broken. This being one of Mr. Hosta's greatest achievements made him move to another city where he now holds the record for the longest flight time of a bright, magic, blissful fusion fairy. Iris Canterbury has the personality of a vibrant pianist on the constant verge of writing a masterpiece, with a supercharged concentration on all matters at hand. Iris was voted most likely to succeed at the Gargashit School of Youth and Magical Adolescence. Aster and Iris have always been a contagious pair to be around, with the brain power of a small dark magic nuclear reactor combined. Kabira Daisy is none other than the granddaughter to Miss Daisy, the proud owner of Miss Daisy's boots. Kabira, Gabby for short, has won over the hearts of the Gargashit people as well as all boot wearers alike. Kabira Daisy has lived on the highest floor of Miss Daisy's boots since she was adopted by her grandmother, Miss Daisy. Miss Daisy's boots is an oddly fascinating building, the shape of the store being in somewhat of a foot, with the toes pointing up towards the sky. The toes themselves are each a loft with a small kitchenette, the middle toe being a large communal bathroom, of course. Miss Daisy herself lives in the digitus minimus pedis, also known as a little toe. The little toe itself is oddly enough the largest loft of all the toes. Considering the bright magic spell of Digitus Maximus Zimmer, when said by Miss Daisy upon entry, allows the loft to grow a quarter mile in all directions. Gabira has lived in the Hollock, known as the Big Toe, since she was a child. The Big Toe is the smallest of the lofts, considering a portion of the toe is used as bright magic boot storage. The ceiling of Gabira's loft is all glass and lays next to multiple bright magic neon glow fairies atop. Fairies illuminate the glass ceiling at night, leaving the sight of a majestic cosmic array of lights while lying in bed. The thin tin sign that has been nailed to the front of the counter below the register at Miss Daisy's boots is sadly engraved in the minds of all Gargashit boot-wearing species alike. The sign reads, "I live until death finds me. I breathe until there is no more air. I see until there is no more light to be seen. I wish until hope has left me wish-free. I hear until all that can be heard has passed. I think until all thoughts have left my mind. I die when life becomes lost." The passage on the tin sign has no record of its author, but is believed by many to surprisingly be written by the eldest green-eyed croatman, none other than Craspedia Batesia. Miss Daisy denies any theory that the writer of the passage is of any green-eyed croatman. Gabira has had a rich, magically riveting childhood, being raised by her grandmother, Miss Daisy. Miss Daisy has always tried to make Gabira feel like a queen among princesses. The taste of a uniquely expensive lifestyle has led Gabira and her grandmother to being the biggest and most flamboyant socialites in Gargashit. Gabira and Iris have had a strange childhood growing up, both being adopted by a grandparent as a child and both having to endure the on-and-off romance of Mr. Canterbury and Miss Daisy. The two grandparents were both widowed in their early 20s. The great hidden spark fire of Gargashit had gone ablaze, and the winds blew the smoldering fire into relentless action. The city of Gargashit lost countless lives during the great hidden spark fire, and Mr. Canterbury and Miss Daisy's spouses were of the many. The Great Hidden Spark Fire itself was rumored to have started by the legal recital of a dark magic spell that has been lost for centuries until then. The spell itself is said to only exist when a righteous soul of a new mother has been stolen and 3 dark magic witches have set fire to themselves while chanting the spell while surrounding the mother. The spell itself is to make the dark magic witches themselves age many years in reverse. Legend goes that the 3 dark magic witches had not known of the new mother's previous miscarriage, and the spell chanting sent a fireball crashing down the sides of 4 city blocks. The fire itself cannot be contained by the means of water alone, and had to be fought by the most skilled bright magic spellcasters in Gargashit. The Great Hidden Spark Fire of Gargashit has been recorded in the Gargashit book book of bright magical truths and record-breaking for having the highest flame towering at a height of 288 inches. The flames were not what killed Mr. Canterbury or Miss Daisy. It was a bright magic spell that flooded nearly 12 city blocks with a surge of water 20 feet high. The surge of water had a reflective spell bonded to it and allowed nothing underneath its surging swallow break for air. The fire was instantly washed away, and so were 103 Gargeshit souls. The 12 city blocks the hidden spark fire spread through laid ruined buildings in the newly built bright magic Verbindelig Crespedia Baptisia Library, named after the renowned writer Crespedia Baptisia Court. Gabira Daisy and Miss Daisy are both half-breeds, a deadly combination of two species to be exact.
The chance of one half not being human is a very peculiar science when it pertains to genetics. The one half of Gabira and her grandmother is a bright magic blissful fusion fairy, and the other half stemming from an ancient breed of dark magic basilisks. The ancient dark magic basilisk genetics give Gabira and Miss Daisy snake eyes and the tongue of a lizard. The snake eyes themselves are solid black, with the shape of an oval and the lizard tongue split in two at the tip and stretching an astonishing 8 inches. The genes of a dark magic basilisk leave them both somewhat of a chameleon, with the ability to be seen as any species of person from the outside appearance. The only downside of having this power of an ancient dark magic basilisk is only being able to change into the same gender of which you were born. The best ancient dark magic basilisks become engraved with the skill of acting. The oldest have the ability to portray almost anyone's personalities. The legend reads that species that possess the genes of the ancient dark magic basilisk cannot use their chameleon power to be seen as a green-eyed croatman. The ancient dark magic basilisk is rumored to only have one enemy of species, and that is also rumored to be the green-eyed croatman. The hatred the ancient dark magic basilisk has for any green-eyed croatman stems from the fact that any species that holds the genes of a basilisk cannot resist the pheromones the green-eyed croatman projects. The hatred of the green-eyed croatman has never interrupted the friendship that Astra and Gabira share. Gabira's grandmother, Miss Daisy, on the other hand, cannot stand Astra and his grandfather, Mr. Foxglove, and has always ignored the presence of any green-eyed croatman. Astra Azalea, Iris Canterbury, Gabira Daisy, and Cleome Petunia are the four names carved into the large magic oak in the center of Gargeshit City Park, directly left of the fountain, and can only be seen when the simple spell of Guess Again is cast upon it. The simple bright magic spell Guess Again, if repeated 5 times while holding hands with a true love, also reveals a passage that was carved above. The passage carved reads, "To tour the shadows within, only to find an echo of pure silence on the darkest walk with a friend. To quote true belief, not knowing what thoughts might compound, only to realize opinion can be one-sided. All have one. Is that itself a sin?"